Hey, growers of the world, Jordan River here with more GrowCast. Thank you for tuning in today. Today we have Mary Beth Sanchez, you know and love her, the queen of the GrowCast Growers Chat, of course. Today we're talking about heavy metals and binding up heavy metals with humic acids and other toxins in your soil. A lot of great stuff in this episode. I know you are going to enjoy it. Before we dive in with Mary Beth, though, gotta give some love to Microbe Life Hydro. MicrobeLifeHydro.com is where you can find them. Use code MLHGrowCast for 10% off MLHGrowCast. It's a limited time code. Go and try their variety of products. The Photosynthesis Plus, loving the Photo Plus, of course. Their Nourish L, that's their humic acid product, seabed derived. After listening to this episode, you're going to want to give that a try. Along with a bunch of other products like their All-in-One and their Vegetable Enhancer and their Aminos. Try it all, folks. Use code MLHGrowCast. And or find Microbe Life in your local grow store. Thank you to Microbe Life. Thank you to you listeners. Without further ado, let's jump into the show. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to GrowCast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. I just took a puff there. Before we get started, I urge you to share the show. Make sure you're subscribed. Give us a good rating and review. You know the drill. Share the show with a grower. I love when you guys send me messages that you turned on someone to the show. That's my favorite. Thank you all so much. Today we have Queen of the GrowCast Growers Chat, Mary Beth Sanchez, on the line. What up, Mary Beth?
Oh, you flatter me so. I love it. doing pretty good today. You know me. I like to tell you it's a lovely sunny day.
Oh, spring, yes.
Springy.
Spring is there in the Emerald Triangle?
Well, the only problem is we're still having nights that are cold below freezing, and all the fruit trees are very confused. They're all putting out their flowers, and then the night comes and we're going to have a year with very little fruit, which is sad.
Oh, knocking them back.
Yeah, because the oak trees are still not opening their leaves, and the oak trees are the old wise ones. They know to wait. It's not time yet.
Oh, that's amazing.
So dagnabbit, but such is life. You know, it may come to the world someday where we have to put our fruit trees in greenhouses just to get the fruit. Because if the weather keeps messing with us, you know, it's hard to predict. Have you seen they're still having tornadoes and snow in places? And
oh, my gosh.
Flooding
crazy.
In Tennessee. Have you seen the weather in Tennessee?
I didn't see that.
They have been having terrible weather. Well, it may be, that, you know, finally passed. But past couple of weeks, they've been having floods and floods and floods. I'm like, really? Is this not really going to calm down? When are people going to be able to start planting their crops?
My gosh.
And on our topic of the day, the heavy metals, who knows what kind of things are being washed around flooded conditions.
I didn't even think about that.
Toxic materials. Oh, God. Yeah, those could be landing in your garden when you normally had a pristine environment.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so excited to dig into that today. You already mentioned something, though. I have to take a turn here. Talking about the fruit trees. I love how your garden is non-discriminatory. You grow so many different things. You made a post.
Oh, yeah.
You made a post recently. You've said it before a couple times on the show about mycorrhizal fungi and how it's good for so many plants. I think you said like 90% of plants, but not some. Could you just for maybe first time listeners, or it's been a long time. I don't even know if you've covered it on this public podcast. Can you dig into like the ones that mycorrhizal fungi isn't good for? What is good for them, and maybe as to why?
Well, in your ornamental garden, there's the things like rhododendrons and azaleas and such, and they like a form of mycorrhiza that's very specific to their family. So the one that you can buy commercially isn't that. So your commercially available stuff won't help things that are such as rhododendrons, azaleas, heath, heather, certain things. That's a family called Erica AC, and they need a special ericaoid mycorrhiza for them.
Wow.
Which you can only get like if you go to a place where they're grown wild and you kind of dig up in the ground there, it'll be there. You can transfer it that way, but there's no commercial available of that. But in your vegetable garden is where people will mostly notice that the brassica, which used to be the coal family or the cruciferae family, they keep changing the name because, you know, scientists, they love to mess with you.
Yes.
So, but this is the family with the broccoli, cabbage, kale, spinach, mustard, that family is the opposite of the other plants as far as their mycorrhizal needs go. The mycorrhiza is actually their enemy. And they need to be grown in a place where they can be safe from it, because it will actually seek them out to rob them of their nutrients and bring their nutrients back to the plant that they're trying to take care of. And they will go after those plants for a long ways. They've done radioactive tracing, you know, where you put a radioactive dye into a plant and see where it goes, because you can follow with your little Geiger counters without digging anything up.
Wow.
And they've seen mycorrhizal fungus go underneath the road across the street to their neighbor's garden just to rob the brassicas.
That's wild.
Their yeah. Like, well, that's some dedication, boy, because to get through the compacted soil underneath the road, you're going to have to really, you know, have a concerted effort going along. That's the trick for a fungus.
Man.
They don't like to cross soils that are so compacted. But, you know, if there's a way, there may have been, there was an opening somewhere and that puppy got through and whoo.
Man,
it was an amazing, yeah, revelation that it would go that far.
Robbing the cabbage to pay the cannabis, man.
Yes. So if you have all of those vegetables mixed in one garden area and you plant it with mycorrhizal fungi and you wonder why my cabbage or my kale doesn't seem to be thriving the way other things are, then that could well be the reason why the mycorrhizal fungus is not their friend. And they should actually be planted in these separate pots and separate part of the garden. Something that can protect them from wild and crazy mycorrhizal fungi.
That's so wild.
Plant them in the soil that doesn't have it already included. You know what I mean?
This is a really, maybe this is too stupid, too obvious, too layperson's, too layman of a question, but why is no, that? Is it something to do with their roots?
They're just different.
They're just different.
They're just different. They want different things from life. Yes, they're just
they got different goals.
They have different priorities.
Yes, exactly.
their chemical makeup is just somehow different.
Wow. They
have a wonderful place in the world, but they and mycorrhizal fungi do not get along.
Oh my gosh. Well, you are just, that's why we love you. You are just a fountain of knowledge. And, you know, that does transition well. We're doing a couple different topics today. A little bit of like a classic grow chat, I guess you could say, inspired from the Discord where we're having fun for members.
Oh, yeah.
So we're just kind of going all over the place, but you can tell already this is going to be a powerful episode. But actually, you know, it's interesting you talk about, again, the mycorrhiza being able to move, or the mycorrhizal fungi. I know there's like a difference there. But
oh, it grows fast, too.
And it's like
super fast.
We think that things are contained in our garden. We think that things are contained in agriculture. You are sorely, sorely mistaken if that's the case. And like a lot of the stuff we don't even test for. You mentioned heavy metals. That's what we're really going to dig into today. This is a topic that's really concerning me now. It's been coming up on a lot of GrowCasts. It's been coming up on the Coffee, Health, and Science podcast. And it's so important to understand how it works in agriculture, in soil, in geology, basically, to get a grip on it in our own lives and in our own health. So I'm really excited to do this deep dive. Heavy metals on a scale of 1 to 10. I mean, is it one of your highest concerns? What do you think as far as the danger that it poses to the environment and our health?
Wow. Well, you know, here's the problem. If you live in a place where you've got a heavy metal problem, it is the biggest thing on earth. And if you don't, lucky for you, I'm real lucky where I am that I at least don't have a heavy metal problem, but it can be horrible in places because you don't even necessarily know. So often people discover that their housing development was built on top of a dump site of some toxic waste.
Right.
And that was, you know, buried some years ago. And now it's a real estate development. And later they find out, oh my God, the water's toxic. And oh my God, nothing can grow here. And they figure out later, and then they go to sue somebody, and then it's just a big litigation thing. But does the ground ever get cleaned up?
Right.
Who's taking care of the remediation? But here's the thing. Thankfully, we know how to remediate. But the thing is to teach the people with the power and the money to put these things into action is the trick. Because you have to convince them, and you have to convince them that it's worth their investment to remediate these soils when they clearly poison them.
Wow.
You know, sometimes these things are natural. Like, you know, sometimes you have an arsenic deposit that's very
sure,
very strong. And that would be a natural thing. But sometimes it's just so often the case of we make a lot of toxins and we don't know what to do with them. And we just go take and dump them somewhere and forget all about them. And later on, we put housing developments on top of them or other such things.
So crazy, man. And we're learning the horrible consequences of that. And they need to be reckoned with. You know, I saw some college professor or something had come up with the elevator to space waste disposal idea. How if you can build a structure tall enough, you could take this toxic waste and all you have to do is get out of the gravity zone and then you just have to push it towards the sun and it would just float.
That's a fabulous plan.
Well, I mean, it's littering the universe. I wonder if it would... I don't know. We need to figure out a better way.
Nothing would go wrong. Oh, God,
it's going to hit Mars and create a whole fucking race of Hulks.
Have you seen the Japanese monster movies of the 60s? Oh, my God. Rodan and Godzilla are coming back with Mothra and everyone else.
I am a massive kaiju fan. I've seen them all. Now you brought it up. Mary Beth, the reason that those movies were so powerful and so interesting and so fascinating, they were born out of a culture that had just been ravaged by the atomic bomb.
Hello. And have you seen Fukushima?
And then the Fukushima disaster. So the Japanese specifically have had this wild...
Horrible.
And yes, I've seen them all. Gamera, King Ghidorah is like brilliant. Monster X.
I love them.
You just set me off and I love it. But you're right. That was an artistic expression of the exact same fundamental feeling, fundamental guilt that we have for the damage that we've done. And again, we have to reckon with it. And like you said, things tend to go wrong if we don't. There's always Murphy's Law.
They're right now in Fukushima insisting they have to throw this waste into the ocean. They have no option.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, you cannot pop. You're going to just float this to the whole freaking world. That's OK. That's cool, because you don't want to put it on your soil where you created this problem.
It's really
wild. I'm freaking out. I'm really freaking out. This is not OK.
And I know that disaster, a lot had to happen to make that disaster occur.
Yeah, and the brilliant planning to put that thing right there where they did it. Right, an earthquake zone right on the ocean, right on a fault line. And this was really well planned. I'm not a nuclear energy fan. You might have noticed.
Well, here's the thing, Mary Beth. We think that it's almost like we went off on a tangent, but we didn't, because these are the same exact compounds that we're finding in our soil. This is the same that were coming up when I Googled the EWG rating for Algonquin water, and people in chat, members were live in chat. I was Googling their zip codes and we were getting radium and uranium. Yep. And I mean, there were a lot of Bruce Banner jokes in the chat. Trust me.
A lot of real nasty stuff. Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to think of some of the other ones. I believe I want to say rhodium. I could be wrong. That's a precious metal. But there was a bunch of really fucked up elements that I wouldn't have expected to be in our drinking water. So this is literally the exact same thing.
Well, and, did you hear about Florida recently? I think we talked about recently the effects of the phosphate and the potassium mining. And that I mentioned that in Florida, they do a lot of this and they have their waste product that comes from this intensive mining process is stored in these giant, they call them stacks, but they're like a huge bowl that they make out of gypsum lime and they make it huge and thick and fat. But the phosphoric acid is so intense, it just kind of burns right through it after a little while. And so these things create these leaks, and these leaks erode. And then needless to say, they recently had a major blowout, which is just putting ungodly pollutants all around, Tampa Bay and in the area where this thing is going on. And it's not that it's just phosphate heavy. This is full of radioactive materials that are in this waste. Very high concentration of toxins that are just not okay, and especially not in everybody's drinking water, flooding that entire area and all the aquifers. This Florida, how the water system is there. It's just like, what a disaster.
Right.
And this is the effects of phosphate mining and potassium mining. They both have a similar effect and a similar storage system, which is really not super fabulous. And we just accept it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And after talking to Taylor from Rim Rock, every state just has their own, they're just haphazard doing their own thing. Like there's no real protocol. Yeah. And we are about to get into how we can remediate these types of minerals, specifically in our own cannabis gardens and what it means. But just before that, I want to set the stage a little bit more here and just say quickly what I've picked up from the Coffee Health and Science podcast, because what it is a real issue, these heavy metal concentrations. And really one of the things when people don't take it seriously is there's a lot of guidelines as to how much heavy metals we can safely intake, right?
Exactly. They can accumulate.
But that's the thing. They're all observed in a vacuum. So I was talking to this cellular biologist, Dr. John Leaf, on the Coffee Health and Science podcast. And basically it's like, yes, these are real threats between the brake dust and the, exhaust emissions and the heavy metals and all of this stuff. They accumulate to a level where they start to build up like trash in your cells and cause all these abnormalities. Yeah. And the thing is, they go, oh, well, this level of glyphosate is safe in food, and this level of whatever is safe in makeup, but they don't look at them all fucking together, because I'm eating the cereal and then putting on my makeup and then drinking the tap water. Exactly. That's the big thing that I wanted to point out here, which is
constant exposure.
Don't step to me in DM with the levels of this are, I understand that. And the whole thing is kind of a farce. Yeah. And again, take it up with Dr. John Leaf. Don't take it up with me. And when he said all this, it made a lot of sense. And I got worried as a cannabis user, because cannabis is a fucking bioaccumulator. It's like designed to take this stuff up and store it. Right.
True.
So I got to make sure this isn't in my garden. You know what I mean? I'm a little bit worried about smoking the mercury.
Well, guess what? There's the magic thing to save you. And
humic acids. I knew you were going to say humic acids.
And it always works every time. It's God's little gift. You just keep applying the humic acids and they chelate the good and the bad.
That's wild.
And it will only be available to the plant if the plant and the bacteria and fungi all agree that that's what they really want. They'll unlock the key that is holding that little molecule and they'll let it become food and let it become plant available. But if they don't, which maybe they don't feel like eating uranium today, they'll keep it locked up. As long as you reapply or make sure that you have a good supply of the humic acids in the soil, it may be a thing, you know, like myself, I just like to use it in every watering because I'm chelating the chloramine in my water that way.
Right.
I'm keeping that out of my plants. I'm keeping the water to where it doesn't smell funny when it comes out of the hose anymore. You know, that chlorine smell is very strong coming out
of the
hose.
Like pool water.
I put it on my plants and I cringe. But when you put the humic acid in, you don't have that anymore because you're chelating it very quickly. Wow. It happens within seconds.
That's wild. We'll be right back with Mary Beth. Before we do that, shout out to AC Infinity. ACInfinity.com. Code GROWCAST15 for 15% off. And use our codes and send us a screenshot so that you're entered to win free seeds each and every month. AC Infinity makes the best fans for growing. They're inline ducting fans, their Cloud Line series, exactly what you need for growing, whether it's the S series or the T series. And of course, their tents, their Cloud Lab series. So sexy, thick, durable, and really affordable, quite affordable. AC Infinity has what you need. Use code GROWCAST15, a whopping 15% off. Now, this code works one time on Amazon and in perpetuity on their website. So note that if you're in Canada or if you're doing an Amazon shipment, only works once on Amazon. They can't do anything about that. Works forever on the site. GROWCAST15, send unlimited entries to GROWCAST. Screenshot the code, send it, be entered to win free seeds. All right, let's get back to Mary Beth Sanchez. So let's say we use the humic acids. This stuff sounds like magic. It can determine
it
exactly what we want. But let me ask you about the soil health, like back to the kind of environmental side. Is it now safe in the soil or is it just not plant available, but the bad stuff is still in the soil? Does that make sense?
Yes, it's not plant available, but it's still in the soil. And the way to get it out of the soil is the magic trick of the hemp, the cannabis, and the fungi. And some bacteria too. They will go and take these things up. And you know, that product, maybe you wouldn't want to eat those mushrooms or eat cannabis, maybe you would want to compost that because you were using it to remediate a toxic soil.
Or hempcrete or hemp hardwood, or there's lots of good options.
Yes, lots of good options. But there, you don't have to consume that in your body. And you could remediate the soil that way and later go back and test the soil that you don't even have those levels anymore. They were taken up by the fungi and taken up by the hemp. And there's a few other plants that will do similar things, but I know the hemp is one of the very best in the whole wide world. And, you know, fungus as well, particularly the blue oyster is known for just being a fantastic soil remediator for just some of the worst toxic crap you can imagine.
Hell yeah. Love that. That magic mushroom power. But back to the humic acids. You are not a fan of the Leonardite or the Leonardite derived, whatever it is, right?
Well, I don't want to completely write that off because, like I say, if you put it in your soil 6 months later, it'll eventually be fine. So, you know, if you want for long-term use, go ahead and put that out there. That's okay. But if you need a real quick fix for your humic acid, like we need remediation now, it's not going to help you until 6 months later. So for that case, you need the stuff that was derived from the lake beds or the ocean seabeds or from your own compost, just leached out of your own compost, which is, you know, according to Elaine Ingham, the ideal is leached out of your own compost. So don't be shy about that. If you are making compost, just leach that water gently, slowly. It's not a force-fed product. You just want to get those humates gently sort of washed out of the soil and into a container where they're more concentrated, and you can add them yourself just that way. There's no overdose potential, but they'll still have the same effect. It doesn't have to come out of a box or bottle from the store if you have good compost. You know, and by good compost, I mean not full of anaerobic bacteria, more full of aerobic bacteria.
Interesting.
And hopefully fungi, but bacteria is usually the main component of most compost tea. The fungal is going to be pretty light. If at most, you'll have some spores, which eventually will turn into fungus. And once it gets to the soil or the plant, more so than in the tea, fungus doesn't do much growing in the tea because it's agitating constantly.
Okay. That makes sense. So it doesn't have a chance to settle.
Yeah.
Now, you said, you know, never too much humic acid. I use a humic acid base every time I water.
Yeah.
I am using a seabed-derived humic acid, and you got to tell me what you think of the Brandon Rust episode that you haven't heard yet that we'll be dropping on GrowCast.
I bet it's good.
Well, Mary Beth, you're gonna have to get back to me and tell me your thoughts, because he does what you usually do, and he takes apart a wide variety of inputs, including a lot of sea-based inputs, talking about the sodium, and I don't know. You got to tell me what you think. I think it's a wonderful episode, but you don't think it's detrimental that I'm using a seabed-derived humic acid virtually every watering?
Correct. I don't, because I think that's probably sourced from a good source and is probably fine. But I know what his worry is. It's about the heavy metals. He's worried about everything washes to the ocean and it accumulates there. But in certain oceans, they're cleaner than others. Okay. So like, you know, you wouldn't collect it from the Gulf of Mexico, for instance. You collect it mostly from the seas around Norway, which are, if you've ever seen them, very, very pristine and beautiful and not full of a lot of toxins. They don't have a huge amount of agricultural runoff and that kind of thing up there.
Jeez.
They have a different industry. And there's some that's collected from California coast, but it's usually the far northern and in the Washington, Oregon, where most of their runoff isn't going so much there. I don't think that it is really all that toxic where they're collecting it from. But if you're collecting it from places where there's a lot of toxic runoff, then you're liable to have that in your thing. But I'm not really worried about the salts, because I've never seen a plant suffer from the salts in the humic acids or in the seabed products or in the kelp products. I know in principle, and on paper, these things are facts, but it's kind of like those studies that show, you know, if you smoke 500,000 joints a day, it can hurt you. And but nobody smokes 500,000 joints a day. So that doesn't really relevant.
I like that take. I like that take. Listen, you know? Don't get me started on studies. Doctors still arguing over whether an egg is good for you or not. Okay. So don't get me started on that. But I like that take though.
But
I do
so
like
often
that take, Mary
they're,
Beth.
They're based on ridiculous quantities that are so not real that, you know, come on, the look at the level you had to hit before you hit the toxic level. It's ridiculous.
Okay. I like that. I like that a lot. Hey, uh-huh. I am following a very specific grow protocol this particular run, basically just taking Rizo Rich's style because you've seen his beautiful garden and then adding, you know, here or there thing or two, little advice from Mary Beth or whatever. And I'm loving it. I'm really enjoying the Nourishel every time. Maybe I'll do a different style next time, but holy crap, I'm enjoying, I've unlocked the secrets of humic acid. And I was such a dodo because I thought that humic acid was in the Photo Plus and it wasn't. So I wasn't using nearly enough. But anyways,
there you go.
Anyways, well, enough about my garden.
You can't go wrong. I'm sure they don't have enough in those bottles to give you an overdose, so you couldn't.
Cool.
It would be pretty surprising to me.
All about it. So it really seems like magic, these humic acids. And like you said, combined with conscious remediation might be the key to undoing some of the damage that we've already done.
Yeah, and we're kind of assuming that you're trying to have a living soil and not a sterile environment, so the biology is going to be alive in there, helping to make all these processes happen.
Well, can we talk about that? Because my understanding is a lot of these heavy metal contaminants are kind of soil-based and like inputs that you picked up. Are there, do you get these same heavy metal problems in synthetics, or are you worried about different chemical agents like EDTA and stuff? You know what I mean? Like, is it mostly an organic problem because we use so many natural inputs from so many sources?
I'd kind of be more worried about the EDTA because all of those companies that put out the bottles, they all have to submit testing and they all have to have their, you know, material data sheets available so that you can find out easily if they're really, something that was at a toxic level.
Right. That's one of the reasons they're good. That's one of the pros, I would say, to be honest.
Yeah, so I wouldn't be particularly concerned if they'd passed all the rigorous things it takes to get labeled and put on the shelf. It is a process.
Right.
They do have to get tested, you know.
But they got other shit in them, too.
The EDTA is what would worry me more because I know how persistent it is and how incredibly prevalent it is. It's, what are you going to do? But as long as you're getting the fungus out there, you're going to, probably be remediating a lot of that. The more fungus, the better, as long as it's, of course, not the pathogen.
Oh, yeah? The fungus and the EDTA?
It'll take up everything.
Wow.
I can't imagine why would it leave that out of everything else.
Wow.
If it's taking up the most toxic crap, I think the fungus and the cannabis, the hemp, they just really have amazing soil cleaning properties in there. Not utilized enough because God knows we have a lot of sites around the world that could really use some remediation.
Absolutely. And again, the EDTA, it's in so many things. It goes back to that kind of accumulation thing. Same with people with acrylamide and they make all these arguments, but it's like, listen, all these toxins add up. And that's definitely something that we've seen in some limited studies. I've brought up before the 9/11 responder study and the toxic buildup that they got, obviously a very acute, incredibly acute, overblown type of case. But it taught us a lot about what practices really work and how they treated these people who had inhaled so much heavy metal from the tragic 9/11 crises. But they gave them infrared treatment, infrared sauna treatment, and all this different stuff to pull that shit out of them. And it worked. So really, really interesting from not only a health perspective, but an agricultural perspective as well, because that's where it all comes from, you know? I mean, unless there's a disaster.
Let us pray.
Well, no, I mean, but that's the thing. It doesn't have to be a fucking horrible 9/11 type disaster either. Someone just posted, didn't the wildfires on the West Coast cause this horrible runoff? Did you see that post in the Discord? I believe it was called the Forever Chemical. The Forever Chemical. I'm going to Google, see if I can find this news article really quick. I believe because of the wildfires out west, they were finding this new horrible chemical that had, run off or been caused, runoff caused by the fire or something.
Been exposed because of the runoff.
Yeah, exactly. And apparently it's all over California drinking water, and apparently it lasts in you forever. Forever Chemicals pollute water from Alaska to Florida, December 2020. I think it was newer than that. Oh, I should have had this pulled up.
How special.
Anyways, I don't want to just like turn this into kind of a downer episode, but But this stuff does happen. We need to do our best to make sure that we're not adding to it. It's nuts. Yeah.
Please, can we try to turn the ship around before we go off into the cliff?
I apologize if I got that wrong, but I believe it was linked to the wildfires.
I'm just going to go look it up. I wouldn't doubt it at all because there was a lot of scorched, decimated earth out there, places that hadn't burned for ages and ages and ages. All of a sudden, you know, we get some heavy rain, and as you can tell, the rain's been weird and sporadic.
Yeah.
Weather's been wacky. What can you do?
So this heavy metal, are all of them virtually highly mobile? They travel far, or this is mix and match?
Yeah, I would assume. I wouldn't want to go out on a limb and say they're all highly mobile, but I think they're all, you know, you just don't want to have that stuff in really high levels. So get something out there that's going to help protect you from that. And the easiest thing is to chelate with humic acids and to encourage as much fungal as possible. Fungal loves humic acid. They go good together.
Absolutely. Oh, there was one more. Yes, there was one more thing that I wanted to bring up here. I just have this page open. I don't know if you saw this. There was a city in, I believe it was down south. I believe it was Texas. It was a neighborhood that was built over a gypsum mine. Mm. And you can Google cavern beneath neighborhood and then hit the images. Basically, the sinkhole opened up in these people's front yards. I mean, there's a street. You won't believe this. There's a street and then there's just a black hole in the ground. And they started going down and it's this like huge, beautiful, I mean, unnatural and horribly dangerous, but it's this beautiful underground gypsum mine. And they realized that they built this fucking neighborhood on this thin little crust of slab.
Well, that's it. They don't pay attention to these things. You know, they're always finding they've built something on top of something they wish they hadn't. But, oh, well, somebody made some money to be had.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God.
The neighborhood was shocked to learn that their homes were built over an abandoned 50-foot deep cavern.
This is nuts.
So, anyways, I just had to bring up that last one I saw. Go ahead and Google that cavern beneath neighborhood, listeners, and take a look at the Google images.
Yeah. Not the way to start your day.
Indeed, that is a rude awakening. Lovely little exploration. What else do you have to say about heavy metals before we wrap it up here, Mary Beth? Any final wisdom?
No, just reiterate humic acids and for instant gratification, get the lake bed and seabed. For long term, go ahead and use that leonardite stuff, but it's not going to give you the instant gratification. So if I see a plant deficiency, for instance, then I'm going to want you to get the instant gratification. So I'm going to insist that you get the stuff that'll give that to you rather than the one that's going to make you wait 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if a lot of people have a big outdoor scene, they've got some kind of little yard and garden, go ahead and put your humic acids out there that are going to take 6 months because they can be fine in 6 months. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just humic acids are a real simple way to save yourself initially. And if you know that, like, you're living on a toxic waste dump, boy, I'd get you some blue oyster mushrooms and start planting them. And if you're a hemp or cannabis grower, plant plenty. You can't plant too much, but you might not want to consume that product. You might want to compost that product or something. I'm thinking that at a certain point in the process, if it's broken down enough, it just becomes something else. The chemically, it unlocks things and makes the molecules something else. Mm. I'm thinking that happens at a certain point in the process, but I'm going to have to look that up again because I don't want to say something stupid.
Well, that's a good, well, do a follow-up.
Yeah, there you go. But the soil remediating properties of hemp and fungus are just absolutely amazing. And we need to get the word out for people to utilize them more. It can be used in salt water as well.
Absolutely love the regenerative agriculture messenger and humic acid herald. Do you see that alliteration?
Yeah, I love
thank you, Mary Beth. Thank you for this exploration today and about heavy metals and humic acid and all that good stuff. You are so valued, and I look forward to bringing you back as soon as you feel up to it.
Thank you, dear. I am feeling better. I'm not 100%, but I am feeling better. So better is good.
Send your vibes to poor
thank
little
you,
Mary Beth is sick. So
you're darling.
I say that, but they're probably actually going to flood your DM. So just say go ahead and give her a post or a nice little heart emoji.
People are way worse off than me, believe me. I'm doing good. I'm on the way up, honey.
Good,
I'm on the way up.
That's what I want to hear. Love it. Absolutely love it. Thank you again, Mary Beth. We appreciate you. Oh, I'll let you go because I know you got to run. Have a wonderful day, dear, and I'll send you along that thing here shortly.
Thank you, dear. I'll love you all back. Take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Oh, so wonderful. Sending her a Growcast coffee mug, by the way. That wasn't like some sort of clandestine deal that you just witnessed live on the podcast. If you want a Growcast coffee mug, you can go to growcastpodcast.com/merch. There was a big rush of people saying, I didn't know you had merch. And I said, yeah, you can check it out there. So I thought I'd throw that out here. Good little plug there at Growcast on Instagram. Of course, thank you all so much for subscribing, for listening, for downloading. I appreciate you guys. I am honored to help you. I hope you learn something each episode. We're bigger than we've ever been here at Growcast right now. And that's all thanks to you guys. So thank you all so much again. I love each and every one of you. Happy growing, everybody. Be safe and grow smarter. That's our show for today. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. Thank you to Mary Beth Sanchez, as usual. Before we wrap, got to shout out Delta Leaf Labs, deltaleaflabs.com. Use code GROWCAST for free shipping on your tests. And GROWCAST code users are automatically entered to win 10 free tests from Delta Leaf Labs. Elijah is going to be coming back on the show, announcing that winner. And you can also enter those into our giveaway. Like I said, unlimited giveaways. Send us your screenshots to win free seeds. My God. But Delta Leaf Labs, of course, the fastest, most affordable sex testing in cannabis. Stop wasting time sex testing. Get those males out of your garden right away. Don't waste space, soil, or fertilizer. Go to Delta Leaf Labs and use code GROWCAST for free shipping on your tests. Okay, everybody, that's it for today. Thank you so much. We'll see you next time on GROWCAST. Bye-bye, everyone.